It's Ian Pickus, and we're in the Congressional Corner, and we're joined today by New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a Democrat in office since 2009. Senator Gillibrand, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
I want to start by getting your thoughts on a couple of very important people in American history who have died in recent days. What are your thoughts on the legacy of Rosalynn Carter?
I think Rosalynn was an extraordinary woman. I think the way she and President Carter served the American people was unique. I think their administration had a hallmark of serving those most in need and really living out their faith in action and their leadership style. But post-presidency, they created the Carter Center, and they focused on human rights worldwide. And I got to go to the Carter Center to be on a panel about women's leadership around the globe. And that was something that Rosalynn herself cared so deeply about. So their legacy is extraordinary, and it shows what public service really means.
Let's talk now about former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, who died at the age of 100. Perhaps a more complicated legacy. What are your thoughts?
You know, I didn't know Henry Kissinger, and I never served with him. So I know he has a legacy of very significant highs and some significant lows. But what I appreciated about him is that he was always extremely knowledgeable. He was a student of history, but he was also somebody who helped to write history. He really was part of some of the biggest foreign policy decisions of the last 5 decades, and he really had a meaningful impact on the world.
Okay, let's jump to some contemporary issues now. Last time you were on with us, it was September. The government shutdown was right on the horizon. It was averted. We got a short-term spending bill in November that now expires January 19th and February 2nd. Where do you expect things to go from here?
We have the agreement through January. What we're working on right now is to finish the defense bill. It is a bipartisan, bicameral bill that assesses and analyzes how we keep our country safe. It spends resources on national security and service members and different deployments around the globe and different missions around the globe. So we're going to work on a bipartisan basis to get that done, hopefully in the next week or two before Christmas holiday. The supplemental is going to be a deal that has at least 4 pillars. It'll have money for Ukraine, money for Israel. Then it'll have money for humanitarian relief and natural disaster relief all around the globe. And the 4th pillar will be immigration reform, some policy-related and spending-related measures to address the huge influx of migrants into New York and other states and to address long-term immigration policy. So that negotiation is ongoing, and I do expect it to be successful. I believe there is common ground to be found on all 4 things, and I'm optimistic that we can get there.
So the next agreement, you think, will be sort of a real budget bill and not an extender at current levels?
Well, the supplemental is not a real budget bill. It's a supplemental spending bill, meaning it's on top of what normal spending will be. The real work for spending and a budget going forward starts in January. That's the negotiations we'll have on the first half of the budget, first half of the subject matter budget. So what the speaker did is he put half in the January timeframe and the other half in the February timeframe. And so we have passed bills in the Senate in a lot of those spending areas. And so the House will have to pass their versions, and then you conference them and you come up with the common ground between the 2 bills. So the first one up is child care, health care, education, things that are really important for New York. So we'll be negotiating those over the next several weeks.
Do you think the dynamics on the other side have changed at all with the new House Speaker?
They've changed a little bit. I think the Republicans got tired of failing. So I think they're looking at things differently than they did over the last year. I think that separating it into 2 tranches is novel, but not bad. It could work. It could be helpful. It allows them to focus more on few things at one time as opposed to all things at one time. So hopefully that strategy can be productive. The Senate is certainly prepared to negotiate all those spending bills, and we'll be ready to do work with the House to get it done.
Okay, let's jump to foreign policy now. You mentioned aid for Israel not long ago. On Wednesday, you were speaking about the hostages and the temporary ceasefire on the Senate floor. Do you think this pause in fighting is working?
Yes, I think humanitarian pauses to get relief in to people, to get food and water and fuel and medicine to Palestinians is essential. I also think humanitarian pauses to get hostages released is paramount. I'm very grateful that we've gotten some of the youngest hostages released. Abigail, who is 3, just turned 4, was released, Abigail Adan. There's still a 9-month-old baby, though, that has not been released. So I have concerns about all of the hostages, as well as 9 Americans that are still being held hostage. So I support humanitarian pauses for both hostage relief and humanitarian relief. And I think it's important that we continue to use diplomacy to try to resolve what's happening in the Middle East right now and what's happening in Gaza.
Some of your colleagues are saying the ceasefire should be made permanent. Is that something you would like to see?
I understand what they're saying. I understand that a lot of constituents and colleagues want the death and destruction of innocent people to stop. So do I. The death and destruction of innocent Palestinians, the death and destruction of hostages, the death and destruction of innocent Israeli civilians. We want that to stop. The problem is you have a terrorist organization called Hamas running Gaza and using the Palestinian people as human shields in their war, in their terrorism. So we cannot agree to a permanent ceasefire if we have not suppressed, eradicated, or degraded significantly Hamas's ability to continue to take hostages, kill innocent people, behead children. They have to be able to defend their country. So I support all humanitarian pauses. I support using diplomacy to protect innocent people. I support giving Israel guidance about how to fight terrorism and putting the least innocent people at risk. But the problem is Hamas uses those innocent people as human shields purposefully. So I can't support not fighting Hamas.
To that end, as President Biden is seeking more aid for Israel, there was a discussion about placing some limitations or conditions on the aid. And as I understand it, I don't know if you were in this meeting, but National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan briefed a number of senators about the request this week. So do you think there should be conditions on further aid for Israel right now?
First of all, there are conditions on all foreign military aid. There's human rights conditions. There's human rights requirements. It requires an assessment of adherence to international humanitarian law. So any conditions that people are looking for are actually already attached to all military aid. And so I don't think we need more conditions. I think what we can do, though, is help Israel on what strategic missions are most effective in rooting out terrorism. It's really hard to defeat terrorists. It was hard for us to degrade and eliminate al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. It was hard to eliminate and degrade ISIS in Iraq. These are not easy missions. These are hard missions. And I hope that Israel will continue to listen to our guidance about what works and what doesn't work and how you protect innocent civilians as much as possible. There's real experience here that we can give them, and I hope they will continue to use us as an ally to use strategies and tactics that protect the innocent but are successful in rooting out terrorists.
Just in the last few seconds we have in this segment, you're on the Select Committee on Intelligence. Do you have any insight as to how Israel was taken by surprise the way it was on October 7th?
So I don't have any intelligence on it yet, and I don't think they've even had time to do that deep dive. They're in the middle of a war and trying to protect their people and save hostages. So there will be a 9/11 type assessment like we did when we were attacked on 9/11. It took over a year to do our assessment to produce the 9/11 report that analyzed how we could have not seen it coming, how could we have not prevented it, what we had done wrong, why intelligence wasn't shared in the right way at the right time so it could have been prevented. They're going to have the same deep dive. And I mean, I think the country was shocked that attackers could come across the border and go straight into a kibbutz and slaughter families in their beds. I don't think they could imagine that it would take so long for law enforcement and military and any type of armed response to take as long as it took. So they will have that deep dive, and we don't know why it was such an absolute failure. But it's heartbreaking. And I can tell you, I'm sure those in positions of power in that government are feeling deeply convicted that was a significant and irreparable failure.
That's New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a Democrat in office since 2009. And when we come back for the next time on the Congressional Corner, we've got a lot more to ask you.